This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Summer break is over, kids. It's official. NFL teams reporting to camp this week. College football media days are in full force. Hell of a weekend in sports overall, by the way, which we will get to in a moment. Happy Monday as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. No Michael Lombardi today, but very fortunate to have the one and only Will Hill stepping in, handicapper, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. I'm very excited, Will, because the last time you filled in, a tree had fallen down in your neighborhood, which prevented you from getting here for the opening segment. No chaos today, and I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I think we did a few days that week. And I think, what was that, the week of the NBA drafts, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. So that was the first day. After that, it was pretty smooth sailing. So yeah, made sure I was home. Nothing was falling anywhere. And I'm happy to be with you. Happy birthday, 22 or 23. I can't keep track of your birthday.
Oh, but if
hope
only.
You had a good one.
If you want to flip those numbers of the second try, that's where we're at. But I appreciate you, which in media years has me around 63-ish. So hoping I can hold on for a couple more. And so I joke about the chaos at your house and in your life. How about the chaos that we saw in sports this weekend? So Carlos Alcaraz knocks off the 7-time Wimbledon champ once again, second year in a row. We also have the Copa chaos, mayhem in Miami, whatever you want to call it. Like, what was that yesterday?
Yeah, that was scary. I mean, it's hard to imagine they were that unprepared, that just not buttoned up. And I don't know, this is going to be the same location that's going to host a World Cup pretty soon. They were just, boy, that was chaos. And you saw the pictures of people saying, hey, I paid $2,000 for a ticket. Yeah. I can't get in. I thought at some point they might not play the game because they said, hey, we're not going to start the game until we can get everyone who doesn't have a ticket out of the building. And I was on a text with a few people. I'm friends with, were actually at the game covering for Fox or whatever. They're like, if that's the case, they're never going to start the game because it was a disaster. But what do we have? A 0-0 final. So the unders and the draws finally come through. I know some people, a lot of bettors, and I'm one of them. I don't bet much soccer, but when I do, it's usually a draw or 0-0. That was on a cold streak because really the Euro semifinals, the Euro finals, it was all 2-1s. It was all overs. None of the draws came home. But after a tournament of a lot of draws and a lot of unders, we got back to that last night with no scoring and a draw. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, kind of a weird sports time where, you know, a little Wimbledon, the Open coming up. We had Scottish Open, so you kind of mix and match Summer League, MLB All-Star Game. This is the last chance, I think, always, if you're a serious bettor, to really catch your breath. This is a time where you catch up on movies, shows, things like that, because you look up, and the All-Star break's a little later this year than usual. Usually it's around, like, the 11th, the 12th. We're doing it, what, the 16th, the 17th, whatever. Before you know it, August 1st, Hall of Fame game, and then shortly after that, NFL preseason, college football. So last chance to sort of recharge the batteries here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we'll talk plenty of NFL, as we always do here on the Lombardi Line, coming up in about 30 minutes. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, is going to join us, as he always does on a Monday. Later on in Hour 2, former NFL wide receiver, our VSiN lead NFL analyst Mike Pritchard is going to join us. Also, by the way, an MVP of that Colorado national championship team from the early 90s. We'll get his thoughts on CU joining the Big 12 this year, his expectations for the alma mater. But real quickly, as you saw those visuals on your screen moments ago from the Copa America, I still can't get over it. Just swarms of people busting down the gates. You saw the ventilation system, people going in full Shawshank through the tunnels, the escalator just obliterated. I heard the reports estimate that over 7,000 people without tickets were in there. And to your point about, like, this is a venue that is going to host the World Cup in a couple years. It's hosted Super Bowls. Apparently, it's CONMEBOL, the South American Soccer Federation, that actually were the ones that were in charge of the security for this. So it wasn't Hard Rock Stadium, who's used to this, who is the actual people that have been hosting these events forever in this stadium. So they messed up big time with the way this was. Imagine spending $2,000 on a ticket and not being able to get to your seat because of this stuff. I would be livid. And we've heard so many stories of that, to your point. So very unfortunate. Also in soccer, the Euro, Spain strikes late to beat England 2-1. They claim a record fourth Euro title. And for England, Spain equals pain. The drought continues for them. They haven't won a major event since the 1966 World Cup. Brutal. Okay, so from football back to
Copa, just quickly, was everyone safe in Copa? Like, were did anyone get hurt or anything like that? Because it looked like chaos. And the scary thing, like, as a parent, you sit there and you see some of the kids that were scared.
Yes.
Parents losing track of their kids was like the worst nightmare. Hopefully everyone got out safe. I mean, I can't imagine that everyone was completely unscathed. No. Like I said, it was just complete, utter chaos.
I'm sure there were injuries. I haven't seen anything from a reports numbers wise, but what you said about the kids there, those visuals of the gates coming down right away and people just losing their minds trying to find their children, like those poor kids that were stuck in it as everybody's bodies are pushing against each other. That's just not what things should be happening at an event like this. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be exciting. I know you want to support your team, but that's not the right way to do it. It shouldn't be this hard. But as I said, from football to football, we do have SEC Media Days underway. It's day one of four from Dallas, Texas, and it needs to be a big multi-day event because we got 16 teams in the league now for the first time, with Texas and Oklahoma joining up. We heard from Commissioner Greg Sankey earlier today. The teams on the podium today: LSU, South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Vandy. And I loved this quote from Commissioner Greg Sankey: "We're the Southeastern Conference. We're the one conference at this level whose name actually means something." And I don't know if that's shots fired at Brett Yormark from last week at Big 12, where he said that he thinks his league is the deepest in college football right now, or what, but guns a-blazing, Sankey coming out firing today.
Yeah, I'm excited for these press conferences. Everybody's lost 15 pounds of fat and put on 15 pounds of muscle. Everyone's in the best shape of their life. So hope spring is eternal. We'll see if we get any. We'll see what kind of, if any, betting nuggets we get out of it. Probably not. I mean, these coaches, I mean, I joke, but they all say the same thing. Hey, we want to, especially new coaches, we want to play faster and attack. Nobody, you never hear anyone say, you know what, we're going to play a little slower. We're going to be conservative. We're not going to attack as much, and we're going to take it easy. So you have to sometimes read between the lines with these quotes. How much prep have you gotten into in terms of college football? Any of these SEC teams you feel strongly about one way or another? I know it's juiced, but 10.5 for Texas, that's a tough, tough schedule. Them to get to 11 wins. Again, you're laying like -160, -170, depending on the book. But look at that schedule and say, man, if you get to 11 wins, you tip your cap and you beat me, because that's a brutal schedule. But how about you? What do you think?
Well, and that's a fun long tease, because later on in the show, in hour two, we're going to do a little Gridiron Goldilocks SEC edition, looking at these season win totals for teams in the SEC. Too high, too low, or just right? And I'm with you. It's a bear of a schedule for Texas. I know Georgia is the favorite to not only win the SEC and the national title, but their schedule is a bear as well. They're in very tough venues. They're at Alabama, at Texas, at Ole Miss. Yes, they are the favorite for a reason, and they've, I think, lost as many games as they've won national titles in the last 3 years, being two. So rightful for all of those, but it's not going to be a cakewalk either from that standpoint. Mizzou is a team I'm particularly excited about because the schedule is so easy for them, conversely, in the SEC. Also, just what is Alabama going to be under Kalen DeBoer? He's had so much success as a coach at his numerous stops, but it's a different look for an Alabama team that's been led by Nick Saban for such a long time. He had a funny quote today, too, by the way. Because he's doing all the stuff with ESPN. He's going to be on the College Game Day desk throughout the fall. But he said the weirdest thing about the experience today was he hasn't worn a credential in 17 years, and somebody stopped him because he had to put on a credential today.
That's funny. Yeah, look, when you look at Bama, and we'll get into this, you got to be careful fading Kalen DeBoer. That guy is a good coach. He constantly overachieves. I mean, look at all the games he's covered as an underdog, won as an underdog. He is a hell of a coach. It's always hard replacing Bama. And if you're DeBoer, hey, ideally you want to be the guy that replaces the guy that replaces the guy. You want to be like that second guy. You don't want to come right after Saban. It's it's Mac Jones stepping in after Tom Brady. It'd be like if you left the Lombardi line trying to replace Stormy. It's not that easy. No, but seriously, they did a hell of a job. I know to say he has big shoes to fill is just, I mean, it's the all-time understatement. But that guy's a hell of a coach. He's maybe more modern than Saban, I've heard people say this, make this point. Not that Saban lost his fastball, but when you're that successful for that long, you start to lose your assistants. Everyone gets promoted, and there's a brain drain effect that happens where you lose a lot of the coaches around you. I mean, not just the Kirby Smarts, but you go down the line. If you hire well, the guys are going to come to your program and pick people off your staff. So I think they'll be well coached. I think they'll be good. I mean, how strange is it where you can get Alabama at what, like 8-9 to 1 to win the SEC? It's like going back to the you know, the mid 2000s or something. It's been a long time since you get Bama at these numbers.
Yeah, 8-1 right now, fourth shot in the SEC. Georgia, a 2-1 favorite. Texas plus 320, and Ole Miss ahead of Alabama at 6-1. Very high expectations for them and Jackson Dart and company as well. Also in Texas, we have MLB All-Star, as you referenced, the Home Run Derby coming up tonight from Globe Life Park. A couple changes this year to the Derby. Max 40 pitches in each round per player, placing an emphasis on efficiency instead of speed. And instead of the head-to-head bracket in the opening round, they're doing the top four coming out and then bracket for the semis and beyond. Does that change your thought process at all with the way you approach betting this market? And we'll talk plenty of MLB All-Star a little bit later on too.
I was not going to bet it under the old format because I'd gotten screwed so many times where they didn't enforce the rules. Remember, it was a clock, but there were rules about you have to wait for one ball to land until you throw the next pitch. But when guys were trying to play from behind, trying to play catch up, the pitcher would just kind of cheat and nobody would enforce it. Nobody cares. It's the Home Run Derby, except I care because I bet on it. But this, like you said, it evens it out. There's going to be a lot more emphasis on the pitcher to throw strikes because, hey, those if you throw one in the dirt, okay, you don't swing at it, but that's the same as swinging and missing. I mean, you got to have a pitcher that can set up the hitter for success. So I took a shot at Jose Ramirez 13-1. I was on a live bet Sunday with Ben Wilson. He made a case for him, so I'm sort of tailing along there. He was in it a couple of years ago, didn't do well, had to bat right-handed, had a bad wrist. He had a poor showing, but now he gets to bat left-handed. His better side has been pointed out, and he said he's motivated to show well here, which is a big part of this. Because remember, Mookie Betts did this last year, and he's basically half-heartedly going up there, and he did everything but lay down a bunt. So we'll see. It gets a little tedious towards the end. It's a very long event, but it's something to watch.
Yeah, Mookie didn't have the endurance. We'll do a little bit of a deeper breakdown on the Home Run Derby, as well as your thoughts on the All-Star game coming up tomorrow. To lead off hour two of today's show, Pete Alonso is a favorite, a two-time champ at plus 330. Marcell Ozuna has also been a trendy pick there at plus 420. We're going to hit the break, but yesterday on the Lombardi Line, we posted a poll. Which team is the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC? We asked, you answered, breaking it all down next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're cruising here on the Lombardi Line where you know it's all football all the time. And right now at VSiN, you can sign up for our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do here at the network, but especially the football through the Super Bowl, for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. And with VSiN Pro, you'll get instant access to our daily best bets, the exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our special edition betting guides, like our all-new NFL betting guide packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, season win totals, futures, props, awards, bets, and so much more. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the course of the season. Don't wait. Sign up before the end of the month and get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl with our early bird discount, $175. You can do so at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Speaking of the NFL, two-time defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, they are reporting to training camp by the end of the week. We are here, but will they become the first team in NFL Super Bowl era history to three-peat? We asked our audience yesterday on Michael Lombardi's Twitter poll, which team is the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC? The results were all Bengals at 7-1, 42.4% of the near 1,000 votes we took in here. Second, the Ravens, who are a plus 550 price in the AFC with around 32% of the vote. The Texans at 13.8%, and the Buffalo Bills coming in last in this poll. We did get some comments that we'll get into in a moment as well. But Will Hill, obviously in for Michael Lombardi today. Will, as you look at the results from our audience poll, do you agree? Do you think that the Bengals are the biggest threat to win the AFC?
I do not agree. I think people are being very forgiving of that dead last ranked defense last year. I would expect them to play a little better this year. Good defensive coordinator, some new additions, but you're going to have to go a long way to go from 32nd to get where you need to be. I know that was a tougher schedule last year, and we'll get into it. They have a much easier schedule. But the team that I think is the best threat, the team that I think is the biggest threat, and maybe, dare I say, I think I wouldn't be shocked if this is the best team in the league. They're not listed there.
So are you going Jets? Are you going?
Yes.
Okay.
J-E-T-S, Jets. They're loaded with I know you guys don't like them on this show. I think they are loaded with talent. I admit, I don't know what I'm going to get with Rodgers. The injury, I don't pay attention to the off-the-field stuff. I'd wish he'd say a little less, but I don't get involved. That team is loaded. They have a ton of good players. And people aren't going to go back to the well, because if you picked them to do well last year, you got burned and say, hey, I'm not going to touch the stove twice and burn my hand again. I'm going back to the well. I think they really did a good job on the offensive line. People listen to Veasan all the time are sick of me here and giving the same spiel, but they've got a pretty easy schedule. After San Francisco week one, it lightens up. They're loaded on defense. They're good on offense. I think if you can get like Rodgers to be maybe that, I don't know, 6th, 8th, 10th best quarterback in the league, 12th best, the rest of the team. I mean, the team won 7 games with a quarterback that will not throw a pass in the NFL this year. Tim Boyle, Zach Wilson, Trevor Siemian, those guys are not going to throw a pass in the NFL maybe ever again. And they still won 7 games. They're really good on D. I think Rodgers will play pretty well. I don't know for sure, but they are just a stacked team.
So maybe it's just because I was done so wrong last year after drinking the Kool-Aid and having the season fall apart that I'm hesitant to dive back into that well. I do think that the injury concerns are very warranted, not only about him, but about his offensive line, about Mike Williams, who they bring in, even about Breece Hall, who I think is extremely talented at the running back position, but he's had major surgery on his knee in recent history. So there are just questions that I have. Win total, 9.5. There are high expectations for this team. The Buffalo Bills are favored to win the division once again, but the Jets are certainly right there. The Miami Dolphins, some people are high on. I was going through our analyst picks in the VSiN 2024 NFL betting guide, and no one picked the Jets, which did surprise me because there are so many people that do like them to either go over their season win total or win the division. Here are the results there. Of our 21 analysts, 10 were on the Chiefs, so just about half. 3 had the Bengals, 5 had the Ravens, so the highest pick outside of Kansas City. So our analyst decision was that the Ravens appear to be the biggest threat. 1 was on the Bills, 1 was on the Dolphins, and 1 was on the Texans. So 2 teams from that AFC East were picked by people in our guide, but nobody had the Jets, which I found very interesting.
I did a write-up on the Jets to win the division for the guide, but I don't think my picks were in the guide.
You would have been the one.
I don't know that I have the guts to actually call through. What the hell? Who's going to remember? I think the best version of this team is incredibly. I mean, what if Rodgers is really good? What if he's 90% of the MVP player from, I guess it's 3 years ago now. I get the concerns. Again, I completely understand the concerns. But he's still Rodgers. He's still smart enough. He's still accurate enough. I think moving around is the concern. Remember, when he was a younger player, he's a very mobile quarterback. His legs were a big weapon. I don't know if that version of his game is still there, but there's just a ton of that. You agree, you see it, right? You see the upside. Like, the best version of this is very, very good.
No question about it. And that's why I feel like every conversation we have is if Aaron Rodgers and if this team stays healthy, they could be unbelievable. I don't think anybody's doubting that side of it. I am a fan of Aaron Rodgers' skill set and the type of passer he is. You don't become a 4-time league MVP if you're crap. I know what he is and that he's very capable of leading this team to high heights. I question if that's actually going to be the case this year. The Jets, though, to your point, 11-1 to win the AFC. We'll see if they can do it and bring the Jets to the playoffs for the first time in the last 13 years. Some of the other comments that came in addition to, some folks did write the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. No longer just end the season, Jets, by the way. One person, KRAM207, said, I'll take the field. Forget the AFC. I think the Chiefs are going to have their hands full to win the West, with the Chargers having a team that's finally got a coach. So there's potential to face a serious defenses as well, like the Steelers or Browns, once they get through that. Another comment from Hollywood Cole. If Cleveland gets baseline quarterback play and 15 plus starts from Watson, watch out. So take me through your thoughts on the Browns right now, because to follow up on this comment, what are we even saying is baseline quarterback play from Deshaun Watson at this point? What does that look like?
I think the most realistic expectation, the fairest, like the most likely outcome, is you get like league average quarterback play if he's healthy, which, remember, I mean, health has been a concern on top of everything else, just not playing, which I think the time away, I think the rust is really deteriorated his game. If you want to argue that, you say, hey, he was just starting to click that game against Baltimore. He was just starting to cook. He played really well in the second half, and then he got hurt and we never saw him again. I just don't know if we're ever going to see the Watson they expected ever again. I don't know how you could expect. I mean, 2019 was the last time he was that top five, top eight quarterback player. That's a long time ago now. That's before the pandemic. That's half a decade ago. It's really unprecedented for a guy to go this long without playing that well and then play that well again. Now, look, if you're optimistic on the Browns, say, hey, we had a rotating guy, quarterback situation, and we still won 11 games, still made the playoffs. They only need average quarterback play because they are similar to the Jets. The roster is very good. Where you just, hey, you get league average quarterback, you're probably going to win 10, 11 games. It's just, if you have bigger goals in terms of like winning a Super Bowl, I just don't know if that version of Watson, this version of Watson, the upside is there to actually like go to an AFC championship game, win a Super Bowl. We're going to have to see a Watson resurgence, stay healthy, look like the player from 5 years ago. I just think that's unlikely at this point.
Yeah. And they're 22-1 in the conference for a reason. I just have concern that if you paid Deshaun Watson as much money as you have, why is Joe Flacco leading this offense better than your marquee franchise guy? That's concerning. Win total for the Browns, 8.5. They're a plus 150 shot to make the playoffs. Over the last 2 years in Cleveland, 12 games played, 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. The last full season he played in Houston, 2020, 33 touchdowns, 7 picks. He's a far cry from that guy. A couple more comments here that we have. Walter Sobchak said, I don't think any teams are ready for the Ravens with Derrick Henry. It changes how they're going to have to play D against them. And Brian Zukowski, it should be the Ravens as the biggest threat, again, to the Chiefs and the AFC. But they continually come up short in the playoffs. So the Bengals, and Michael and I talked about this on the show yesterday. He's not wrong when it comes to the Ravens in the postseason. Lamar Jackson, 2 MVPs, but nothing to show for it in the playoffs from a team standpoint, 2-4 in his postseason career.
Yeah, and I've always been a huge Lamar defender. As a Vikings fan, I still rue the day they passed on him, and I think Mike Hughes was the pick instead. I've loved Lamar since college, love him as a pro. The Chiefs game in the playoffs, that one alone was like, man, this is hard to defend. You could say, hey, if Zay Flowers doesn't celebrate, whole new game. He didn't play well in that game. There's even concerns, hey, running's a big part of his game. Is he starting to lose a step at this stage of his career? Remember, what is this, year 7 for him, which is hard to believe because it seems like it was just a couple years ago he got drafted. But year 7, that's when running backs start to lose a step or two. I mean, it's if he loses a step, that's a big part of his effectiveness. The big concern with the Ravens, they lose Mike McDonald. They lose some offensive line pieces. Look at that schedule. They play the first 5 weeks. Chiefs, Bills, Cowboys, Bengals, all within the first 5 weeks. That is a first place schedule.
And among the teams still with the highest win totals in the NFL, sitting at 10.5. In the division, plus 140 favorites, but it's going to be a very, very competitive division, as we talked about. And we'll see what the Cincinnati Bengals are with Joe Burrow back. We know he's said multiple times the window is his career, but he recognized a little bit more about his career, I don't know, vitality, potential for longevity, all of that. And is that something that is going to push him over the edge this year? We'll see. We'll pick up this conversation after a quick timeout with Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. Also continue our deep dives and get a glimpse into early betting on this week's British Open.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Will Hill stepping in for Michael Lombardi today. Stormy Bonatoni with you back here live on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, discussing last segment, who's the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC? Of our VSiN analysts in our VSiN NFL betting guide, most liked the Chiefs to repeat, but the next closest pick was the Baltimore Ravens. Our audience vote from yesterday's poll came in with 42% backing the Cincinnati Bengals, and Will Hill likes the Jets. So to further this conversation, we welcome in Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City, via our progressive guest line. Two-parter for you, TG. Who, in your opinion, is the biggest competition for the Chiefs in the AFC? And then what's the betting market telling us to this point? Who are people taking to win the conference?
Well, Will Hill must be a Borgata customer. Because, again, the Jets, obviously a very popular team in these parts. And I think if you add up the ticket count on probably the second, third, fourth, maybe even fifth, sixth, in terms of ticket count in the AFC to win the AFC championship, you may still not even get to the Jets' number of tickets that we've written on them. But so there's Jets are a big liability for us, sitting at 11-1. Who do I like? I mean, listen, I think the Ravens have a very brutal schedule, but I still think that they are the team that are going to challenge the Chiefs here. Bengals have been, you know, talked about quite a bit in the offseason, but, you know, this AFC North division there, you know, last season, every team in that division finished with a winning record. When you look at the, and when you look at the schedule for these teams this year, you know, things start to come into focus a little bit. You know, case in point is the Steelers. They have what I would say is the toughest last 8 weeks of the season that I can recall any team having in recent memory. And when this schedule got released, we adjusted our season win total down. We went from 8.5 down to 7.5. And honestly, I don't hate a play of under 7.5 on Pittsburgh at a nice plus price. A lot of question marks for the Steelers outside of the schedule. You know, the defense should be solid, but of course you have Russell Wilson starting with Justin Fields backing him up. I'm not sure what we're going to get out of Wilson or how long they will stick with him as a starter. But having Arthur Smith come in as the OC, I think, gives them some promise. The offense has been the one thing really holding the Steelers back the last few seasons, but I just don't know what you're going to get out of Wilson or Fields for that matter. And when you stay in that division, speaking of not knowing what you're going to get out of the quarterback position, you go to Cleveland, who has Deshaun Watson returning after only starting 6 games last year. Jameis Winston's backing him up. Now, they did add Jerry Jeudy to receiving core. Nick Chubb is back from injury. But the questions around Watson and how he will look, if he ever regains the form that we saw years ago with the Texans or even looks somewhat comparable to that Deshaun Watson, I don't know. My feeling is that ship has sailed. And then that leaves us with the two teams that, you know, we're expecting to battle it out for the top of the division, Bengals and Ravens. And obviously, Baltimore looked tremendous last year until their final playoff game, won 13-4 in the regular season with Lamar Jackson staying healthy all year. But, you know, they lost players on the offensive line, which is a little concerning. Big addition in the backfield is Derrick Henry there, who may or may not be on the downside of his career, depending on who you talk to. But they also have Justice Hill with Henry, and no longer have Gus Edwards or J.K. Dobbins. But we know this Baltimore defense remains one of the better ones in the league. And let's face it, Baltimore has a very difficult schedule to navigate. There is a reason you're seeing people pick Cincinnati to win this division. And that's the ease of the Bengals schedule compared to the Ravens. Joe Burrow is coming off an injury plagued 2023 season. Early on, it was the calf that he hurt in training camp, and it really hampered how he moved around in the pocket. You saw his numbers really dip. And then when the calf seemed to heal, you saw better movement with his legs, and then the wrist injury happened. So, you know, Jake Browning did step in, played admirably as the backup, but as usual with teams, a lot is going to come down to quarterback play. But another piece, I think, before people get really high on Cincinnati, is that defense needs to improve. They really need to step up from where they were last year to be, I think, a serious contender to Baltimore or the Chiefs. On paper, they did get better. And obviously their schedule is a plus. But I think when it comes down to it, I have Baltimore power rated 2 points higher than Cincy on a neutral. Baltimore should rightfully be favored to win this division, even with the difficulty in schedule. So right now we do have Baltimore plus 135. We actually opened Baltimore plus 110. So they have drifted a little bit higher. Bengals, we opened plus 175 to win the division. They're down to plus 165 right now. And, you know, Baltimore's season win total is a little tricky. It's sitting around, depending where you go, 11.5, 11. Possibly you can find 10.5 out there. But I think 11 is probably that right number. When you put 11.5 up, you're going to get people taking the under there on the Ravens season win total. Cincinnati's sitting at 10.5. And, you know, we've gotten pretty good two-way action on that at the 10.5 number. So slightly juiced to the over. We have a little bit more money bet on the over, but it's been decent two-way action on the Bengals season win total there at 10.5.
Thomas, when you say you have a lot of Jets money, I'm sure people listen to that and say, hey, that's square money, that's homer money. People will just bet in their favorite team. But squares usually don't bet this early in the process. Is that money respected? How do you profile that money coming in on the Jets?
Well, there in this market here where we're sitting, it's some of both. I mean, it's probably a lot of it is just, as you called it, homer money. There's a ton of Jets fans, Giants fans. We just get a ton of New York money in general. But I think, listen, when you look at the Jets, I personally have bet their season win total over of 9.5. I understand that there's questions about Rodgers with his age coming off the seriousness of that injury. Totally get that. He has a lot of weapons at his disposal this year. If he can stay healthy, I realize that's a big if. If he can stay healthy, this Jets team, I think, is loaded, can certainly compete in the division. And the fact that now they have somebody who's actually a backup that they could throw in there if something happens to Rodgers, I do like the Jets' chances here. We have seen a little bit of respected money come in on the Jets season win total on the over. A lot of it when you take into account our liability, it's just a lot of that will comes from how much volume we write on the Jets. And a lot of it is just due to our location.
See, and Will, do you see what I'm talking about here? Everybody we have on that talks about this team says if, and it's a big if. And that's all that I'm saying. I don't disagree. It's the if is that gets me.
They don't give away the money. Everything comes with an if. It's betting.
TG, let's quickly shift gears to golf because the Open Championship is coming up this weekend. What number do you have Scottie Scheffler at this point? And does anybody think that Rory McIlroy can take that step back up at the British?
Well, I mean, Scheffler is plus 450 right now, and that's typically where you see him or where you've seen him in majors this year. Around that 4-1 range. He took off last week, didn't play in the Scottish. He actually went to Troon, which I think was a response to what he did there with the U.S. Open, where he didn't really see the course until he showed up and realized, hey, that probably wasn't the best way to prepare. So he took some time to get to know Troon. He certainly is getting bet here. No liability on him right now. Hovland is got some liability on him at 22-1. Sepp Straka, another guy that much further down in the odds board, 80-1, but some decent liability. We've taken a couple of sharp bets on Straka there at 80-1. At the top, the guys at the top, McIlroy at 8-1, DeChambeau, 12-1, no real liability to be concerned with there.
TG.
Thomas.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to quickly ask, any action on the Home Run Derby? It's on TV and people can bet it. There's nothing else on. I'm sure you're writing a little bit just because of that in the last 30 seconds here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we're getting up as many props as we can around it. Over-unders for first round, matchups, longest distance. For home run. So, I mean, you can do quite a few things around the contest besides just the outright winner, obviously Alonzo. But now that Alec Bohm has also snuck in, we kind of have two hometown guys that will probably get some support here at Borgata locally.
That's awesome. And for as many struggles as Major League Baseball has getting eyeballs on the sport with the Home Run Derby and the talent that they have in the All-Star and Paul Skenes starting, like, this is the all-star event that people watch. So it'll be really fun. TG, thanks as always. You're awesome.
All right. Thank you.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Always appreciate his time. As we continue here, continuing NFL talk, the top 10 quarterbacks per a survey of 80 front office staffers, coaches, and scouts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our betting tools and content also available at VSiN.com. All of our show hosts, experts, and analysts have best bets laid out in an easy-to-consume format, betting splits, exclusive articles, each and every day, betting tools, betting guides, and so much more. If you haven't checked out VSiN.com yet, what are you doing? It's your one-stop shop for all things sports betting. Alongside Will Hill, in for Michael Lombardi today, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. And it is time to talk quarterbacks here because ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, he does this every year where he takes a survey of executives, scouts, coaches across the league and goes through their top 10s in each of the respective position groups. And this morning, he dropped quarterbacks. So we have the top 10 by approximately 80 or so different execs and high-level people in NFL organizations putting their top 10 together. And this is kind of how it averaged out, Will. So I'll read the list here. We'll get your reaction. We're going to share our top five quarterbacks in the NFL as well. But here at the top, Patrick Mahomes to the surprise of no one, followed by Joe Burrow at 2, Josh Allen 3, Lamar Jackson 4, Matthew Stafford 5, Justin Herbert at 6, CJ Stroud in year 2 at 7, Aaron Rodgers 8, Jared Goff 9, and Dak Prescott just squeaks in at 10. Anything surprise you here? Any omissions, players left out that you thought would be in?
I think it's a pretty good list, but we have 9 minutes and 8 seconds left in this segment, so I feel like I have to fake outrage. How could you have this or how could you have that? No, it looks like a pretty good list, and we'll get into ours here. I think Mahomes is obviously clearly the best quarterback I've ever seen. You've learned the hard way how good he is as a 49er fan. I think you can throw a blanket over the next 2, 3, 4 guys where, hey, on a certain day, a certain week, depending on the matchup, the just whatever – they're all pretty close. So I have no major issues with this. Stafford's a little higher than I expected, but hey, he played really well last year. Now with lists like this, and I don't know, who'd you say did this list? Fowler?
Jeremy Fowler.
He's kind of ripping off a little bit of the Mike Sando bit. Cause Mike Sando has done this for like a decade where he surveys people around the league and this has become his calling card where he does the different tiers of quarterbacks. And I think it's usually right around this time he comes out with his list. So that'll be out soon. And it's always interesting to see the different tiers. Stafford. What I was going to say though, do you take into account the fact that health has been a concern? Hey, he was healthy last year, but yeah, he's an older player. You just look at it like play on the field. So there's a ton of room for interpretation. I know with your list, you had Rodgers up there, and we'll get to your list where it's like, all right, based on career achievements, Rodgers is certainly up there, but is it right now? Like if you had to go win a game, so a lot of room for interpretation. I have nothing. I don't find anything egregious with this list. I probably would have snuck Purdy in at some point here, yeah, towards the bottom, but I don't really know who I'd bump, to be honest.
So, and that's the thing. I think that 9-10 range, however you wanted to sift through things, there's a lot of interchangeability. To your point, no Brock Purdy, despite his win percentage, completion percentage, QBR being better than a handful of guys on this list. He's obviously won more playoff games than a lot of guys on this list. No Jalen Hurts, no Tua, no Jordan Love, no Trevor Lawrence, who has just got paid as one of the top five quarterbacks in the league.
He's correctly off this list. I've never been.
I'm not arguing, but it just brings back into the conversation how much these guys are getting paid, probably undeservedly so, given the way that salary cap has gone up and the expectation for value at the position has gone up. But I thought that was interesting. So you talked about the top fives that we did. Before we get to ours, why not hear what Tyreek Hill had to say? Because he knows these guys really well.
Top five quarterbacks in the league. Patrick, Tua, Lamar, Dak, Baker Mayfield.
Is that not excellent?
I don't think when Tyreek Hill retires, he's going to get a ton of offers for like a GM or front office role. He's really fast. We'll just leave it at that. He's really fast.
Hey, he'll make a hell of a lot of money in the media if he's coming in with hot takes like Baker Mayfield, the top five quarterback, right? But just fun.
How about Tua? I mean, Tua, like, were you at the game in Kansas City where you basically didn't cross midfield except for that one kind of broken play where even on that play he threw a duck? I mean,
hey, he's got to hype up his guy, right? And we even heard him last offseason talking about Mahomes and Tua and how they're his guys. So it's fine. But what are your top five? Walk me through 1 through 5.
Quickly, he's going to need that media money with if you read some of the reports in the media, because he's going to need some money.
He can field a football team.
Yes, he can field a football team. I will. I mean, look, Mahomes is first. You'd have to just dismiss anybody's list that wouldn't put Mahomes first.
Yep.
I went with Allen second. I just think the running ability, I haven't loved, and I kind of discount or grade on a curve where I think quarterbacks aren't in great situations, as you'll see with the rest of my list. Allen, I don't love McDermott. we would probably look at him very differently if the Bills just kicked the ball inbounds in that 13-second game in Kansas City. Then he's hosting an AFC title game, and who knows? Maybe he has a championship. His kicker missed a kick last time against Kansas City. I think the biggest problem I have with quarterback discourse just in the general media, people act like it's one-on-one basketball where, hey, this guy won, this guy lost. There's a lot of factors that go into winning and losing, and winning and losing is certainly a factor, but I just think Allen, the raw talent, the situation around him hasn't been great. I think he's a hell of a player. Lamar, I went with third, two MVPs. Now, last year for an MVP season, it was a weak MVP season, but still twice in, 5 years now, he's won MVP. That elevated him to third. And this is the controversial one. And look, if you argued with me, I couldn't disagree with you. Most people are going to go Burrow. I went Herbert four, and it goes back to situation where I'll fight off the Burrow argument before I present Herbert. Burrow, people are going to say he won, he's a winner, went to a Super Bowl. If Tannehill doesn't throw, what was it, three or four picks in that Titans-Bengals game a couple years ago, and then the Bengals kicker McPherson makes all these long kicks, that was a fluky game. That got him to his first title game, and that got him to his first Super Bowl, his only Super Bowl. It goes back to the point that there's just a lot of other factors when it comes to winning and losing games. Burrow's got a great team around him with the receivers. His defense a few years ago played well. His kicker made all those kicks, and the ball bounced his way. Remember, Tyler Huntley in that wild card game fumbled going into the end zone and got ran back for a touchdown, and that spurred the other run for the Bengals. So a lot of this playoff success could have easily gone the other way with a bounce of the ball, which is why I give Herbert a break. Now, I will admit, Herbert did not play well last year, but, I mean, he's had Mario Cristobal in college. He's had Staley. He has not had a team with a home field. He's had receivers and running backs that are always hurt with Eckler and Keenan Allen. I think he's just incredible raw talent. I think if you put him in Burrow's situation, he would have just as much, if not more, success. Burrow's been hurt a lot, which I think has to be factored in here. Hey, you can't just pencil in Burrow for 17 games here. He's had a lot of, you know, appendix, ankle, elbow, you name it. He's been hurt a lot. So it's close. I couldn't argue if you went the other way, but I did go Herbert slightly over Burrow.
Sure, I think that's fair. I think that the reason that people largely have Burrow listed higher and this top 10 list that we have here from a survey of the league has him number two because he's the one guy that slayed the Patrick Mahomes dragon head to head, whereas all of these other guys haven't done it. And that's how my order went out too, truly. I put Patrick Mahomes one, Joe Burrow two, Josh Allen three, Lamar Jackson three, and I gave him the edge over Josh Allen because of exactly what you said. He's had multiple MVPs the last couple years. Josh Allen doesn't have an MVP to show it. He doesn't have an AFC championship win to show it. So I need something, right, as I'm ranking through these. And I put Aaron Rodgers because he does have two MVPs in recent history. And to your entire argument all hour about the Jets, if he stays healthy, he can lead this Jets team to very high heights. And he is... I don't think anybody can question his arm talent. Nobody can question the football mind that he has when he's on the football field and the ability to get the ball to his playmakers in certain situations. So I put Rodgers five. I probably could have put Stafford in there. You could have made that interchangeable with Justin Herbert either. Like, if you're starting building a team from square one today and you want a quarterback, I could easily see Justin Herbert being one of those guys, right? Versus Aaron Rodgers, who's aging and 41 years old and all of the things. To look at some of this from an odds perspective, MVP doesn't necessarily mean the best player, right? It's the best player with the best team and all of the things. So Patrick Mahomes is the favorite there at plus 450. Allen and CJ Stroud, both plus 850, Burrow 9-1. Love, Jackson, and Purdy. And again, like Love, Purdy, these guys held out of the top 10 here. They're short shots at 14-1, followed by Aaron Rodgers and Jalen Hurts at 16-1. Any interest here? Or I know we've talked a lot about Jared Goff farther down the board, names that make sense.
The numbers aren't great. I mean, I go back to 2018 and 19. Lamar and Mahomes won these awards at like 70-80-1 because they were first-year starters. They just don't hang numbers like that anymore. Everything has just been reduced to the point where it's not a great market to bet. I wrote about Goff at when he was 35-1. One book had him 41. But even that's at 28-1. I just thought he was mispriced. Not that he's the best player, not even a top-five quarterback, but it's a team award. It's a team that wins its division and gets a top-two seed, and Goff has a chance with his team to do that, which would put him on the short list. Am I dying to bet it at 28-1? No, I still think that probably be my bet. I just, when you're betting single digits with all the competition you have to stay healthy. I don't know, 8-1, 9-1. It's a great ticket if you cash it, but I just need more bang for my buck. I don't love a lot of these numbers.
Fair. As far as the passing yards leader, passing touchdowns leader, Mahomes the favorite in both of those markets as well, 5-1 and +650 respectively. Stroud, your second shot for passing yards. Dak Prescott, your second shot for passing touchdowns. Okay, we're going to hit the break. When we come back, resetting with hour two of the Lombardi Line, everything you missed over the weekend. We're going to get into some Home Run Derby, MLB All-Star Game coming up later today. And be still my heart, it's football season, baby. NFL training camps are underway this week. We'll be right back.